Test.
My name is Sebastian Martinez, and I was born in Zaragoza, Texas, and this is the test.
All the doors were shut. The only one I could see was Mireya because of the window, but it sounds like they're still talking on there.
Okay. You want to wait a few more minutes?
See if I don't mind waiting.
I think Rosie's actually almost done. She's been in there for quite a while.
My partner with that lady who's running for. Are you going to start with that? Because we were testing some of that.
Yes, I rewound the tape a little bit. This is an interview with Sebastian Martinez on October 12th, 2005, in El Paso, Texas, at the Chamizal National Memorial. The interviewer is Karim Ley Alarcón. This interview is part of the Bracero Oral History Project. So, Mr. Martinez.
You said October 12th?
Excuse me, November 12th. November 12th, 2005. So, Mr. Martinez, if you'd like to provide me with any background information on yourself, your date of birth, where you were born.
I was born in Christian Sebastian Martinez y Treviño in Zaragoza, Texas, which is the small town in Reeves County. In the early 40s, around 43, my parents moved to Pecos. I was born in Zaragoza in November the 16th, 1938. My dad worked briefly in the railroad in around 42, 43, and then we moved to Pecos, where he worked at a car dealership. But the car dealership owner also had a farm, and my dad kept animals at the farm, which we also lived out of. Mainly, we had a cow that gave us milk, chickens, and that kind of thing for us. I went to school, elementary school and high school in Pecos during the 50s, which was pretty racist at that time in Pecos. Graduated in 58 and went to Sol Ross and got my Bachelor of Science in Education. I taught for a few years. And then I enrolled at UTEP, a master's program, with under a fellowship. Dr. Past was the coordinator of that. And I graduated with a master's degree in 1971 in contrastive analysis of English to Spanish and Spanish to English, which is basically bilingual. It didn't have a title then in 1970, but that was what it was. I taught for 30 years and then retired. I've been involved in politics locally, especially with the Democratic Party. But at the same time, I am interested in history, and that was my major study when I was working in my bachelor's.
And you currently live?
I live in El Paso. My address, my homestead is here in El Paso, but my parents left me the home in Pecos, and so I commute back and forth, half the time here and half the time up there.
Okay. And what compelled you to come today and speak about the Bracero program?
Well, because I looked at the pictures that the newspaper had, and it basically showed the Bracero program when they were at the initial part where they were processing the Braceros, but it never said anything about what kind of life or what they did after they were in the farms. Mm-hmm. That's where I come in. I worked in some of those farms alongside some of the Braceros, and my We commuted back and forth to the farms to do, my dad did, to do odd jobs. And I also chopped cotton and that kind of thing during the 50s.
Okay. And what can you tell us about that experience working alongside braceros? What was the environment like?
Well, back then, I never heard anyone gripe. They were very happy. They joked among themselves a lot, and they kidded with us a lot. I was around 14 or 15 when we started working with the braceros, so they kidded me a lot. You know, the man talked, picking on the kids and that sort of thing. So it was a very pleasant thing to work alongside them. Some of the things that really were bad was that when they went into the town, into Pecos, they were more or less herded over to the east side where the Mexican population of Pecos was, because the town was very rigidly segregated. East side was the Mexican community, and the west side was the Anglo community, and so they were mostly bused to that area of town. And that's the kind of experience that I had, seeing that they were badly mistreated, in the sense that it was a pretty rough time for them. But they knew that they had the opportunity to make money and send money back home. I think that's what kept them there.
And was there a processing center in Pecos?
No, there was no processing center in Pecos. Most of them were processed properly along the border towns, like El Paso and Ojinaga and
right.
Laredo. And so the farmers there would contract individuals to bring the braceros to Pecos and would house them in barracks that most of the farmers had bought from army bases, and had barracks almost ideally suited for that type of housing. Some were housed in the army type of metal rounded top shelters, and some actually built long houses where they just put row upon row of cots in the barracks.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just like army style type thing. They slept right next to each other, and in some cases double decker sleeping cots.
Okay. And what memories what memory do you have of those quarters, the cots, the living conditions?
The memories that I have of that is that basically, it was rough from our standpoint. For some of them, they said it was pretty good because they had a sleeping cot and they had running water, and there was an outhouse or several out there in the back. And most of them had cooking facilities where they themselves would do their own cooking. Sometimes they would organize themselves, and someone would do the cooking for a time, and then somebody else would take turns doing that kind of thing. Basically, the farmers tried to keep the barracks as clean as they could. You know, sometimes I would go in and look and see that everything was more or less in a kind of order, and that there was no mess anywhere that contributed to the health hazards.
Mm-hmm.
Of the camp.
And about how many men do you remember being there?
Sometimes, you know, there were as few as 10, sometimes as many as 30 or 40, depending on the size of the barrack and the size of the farm. Some of these farms were very big, very large farms, so they had a lot of them housed in barracks. One right after the other. And the way they moved them about is they had buses or trucks, They all piled into the truck or into the buses and would drive them out to the fields to do the work.
Do you have any recollection of the hiring process? Or upon their arrival, did they check for documents to make sure that they had
their
permit?
I don't recall at any point during the time that they were there that anybody would come around to check to see that they were properly documented. None of the farmers were worried about that. All they cared was that they had a body to go do the work, and when the body came up, they had a name, and they apparently paid them in that system. But there was never, that I recall, any inspectors or immigration or anything like that hassling anybody for documentation.
Mm-hmm. So you were a child?
Well, I was not really. I was 15 at least.
Right.
15,
right.
Yeah.
You weren't what we consider now to be an adult.
No.
But you were
I was what you might call streetwise, because
right.
I was one of 10 in the family. And very early, say 11, I was out there hustling for a job.
And as far as the salaries of what these men were paid, do you remember?
I don't recall any salaries of anyone, because if I remember, I would work and I was being paid 50 cents an hour, which was pretty good for my age in 1953 and 54, because I went after school and did work on the farm and in the summers, and that was what I was paid per hour. Probably they received about anywhere from $4 to $5 a day, from what I thought the comparable wage that was going on.
Right. And what type of work did they do there? Did they have a choice as to the type of work or even their length of employment?
Now, whatever the farm needed done, the foreman, mayordomo, which was usually a local Mexican-American from the town, and he would instruct, I need this kind of work done, who can do this, and shortly after the initial assignments, it turned out that several were good at particular things that they could do, and some already had farming experience, I guess, from Mexico, and so they would say what kind of work they did, and then they were assigned that. But basically, everything was run very efficiently. I don't recall any problems with the work that was being done.
And the men, did they work 6 days a week, 5 days a week? How?
Basically, they worked, I think, about 6 days a week. I'm not sure exactly, because by that I mean is that some of them, if I recall, worked on Saturdays. See. And some of them would even volunteer to work on Sundays, so long, you know. That was arranged with the mayordomo and the farm owner, but most of them took time to go into town on Saturday nights, and either went to the bars, the cantinas, and the whorehouses.
Mm-hmm. What else do you remember as far as their social interactions in Pecos, say, on the weekend?
Most of them, of course, went into town for recreation. And there were a lot of cantinas. I recall there were some city blocks that had anywhere from 4 to 5 cantinas. It reminded me of Juarez here in the 60s, you know, where in the red light district. Pecos turned into that, at least the east side of town turned into a red light district, because Pecos had basically a population of around 6,000 to 10,000. It varied, and then the population would swell to as much as 50,000, because all men, and they filled the cantinas, and they had to get their recreation somewhere. And there were a lot of women who serviced the men in the cantinas. Sometimes these recreational activities became well organized, where you had a man who would buy a van, would take two or three women, and would go from farm to farm soliciting the business. And some of them did very well. I recall several women who were very poor, but eventually they ended up with big convertibles.
And by the business, you mean prostitution?
Yes.
Okay. You've also come with some stuff that you wish to share.
Oh, yeah. I made an outline basically about some of the things that I recalled. We talked about the housing, but I also wanted to talk to you about the provisions that they bought to feed themselves. So what happened was that some of the farmers would form co-ops and have particular co-op stores, and the braceros would go to these stores. Sometimes they'd pay with cash, sometimes they would assign it to the farm owner. And I don't know how the farm owner made payments or that sort of thing. That was done in offices. I remember that many of them shopped at the local Safeway store, and because all labels were in English, many of them went through a lot of learning things. For example, people became aware that they were buying a lot of dog food. A can was very popular among them, was Carne del Perrito, which had a dog on it. But at that time, the dog food was not like it is today. It actually had horse meat or beef in it sometimes. And that's what they bought. There were actually chunks of meat in the can, so they bought that. But eventually they were being told that that was specifically for dogs, and so they'd stop buying that. Most of them would, of course, buy the fresh cuts and that sort of thing. But that's basically how they would do it. Many of the Mexican-American part of town organized. They also had stores, grocery stores, where they would cater to the bracero. And the way they took the business from the co-ops and also the Anglo part of town is that they would have buses would go into the fields and pick up the braceros, and their buses would bring them to the stores, would buy the groceries, and then drive them all the way back. And that was very convenient for the bracero. Safeway would not do that, neither would the co-ops. They would not do that. So that's how the Mexican-American population in Pecos got some of that. In recreation, I've already mentioned that one aspect of nightlife, but they also enjoyed swimming in the water tanks, in the irrigation ditches. The water there would run very clean. It was not dirty or muddy at all because it was pumped out of the ground, and they would get very close to where the pump was and be thousands of gallons of water coming out of there per minute. So that's where they use that to bathe also and for recreation. They enjoyed, beside cantinas, there were a lot of theaters in Pecos that showed Mexican movies, mm-hmm. Pedro Infante and all of those. And they were always full, Saturday nights and Sunday nights, all day, full house. Because they enjoyed, probably many of them had never seen films in their own country if they lived out in the rural areas of Mexico. But
and were the theater proprietors, were they Anglos? Or
no,
Mexican
they were Mexican Americans because the Anglos had their own theaters,
okay.
And they showed English films, American films, and the entrepreneurs in the Mexican American communities would set up their own little theaters. Sometimes they were just barracks, you know, with a film cam, with a camera and a projector and a screen. And, you know, they'd come in for 10, 15 cents a shot.
And you've shared with us the rigid, segregation that took place in Pecos. How were Mexican Americans treated in Pecos? And then how did Mexican Americans treat braceros? Do you?
Mexican Americans were segregated. We went to the Mexican school. We went to in the elementary schools. We went to those because we were Mexican Americans in that town. The way that we interacted with the Anglo part was that we held jobs on that other side of town, and we went shopping in some of the stores there, clothing stores mostly. But then shortly after the braceros came in, some of the Mexican American entrepreneurs began to put up stores that had clothing and food stuff. So the population began to shop there. The Anglo community resented, the town itself resented the influx of braceros because they were all over town. They filled the sidewalks and that sort of thing. So there was some resentment for that. But the business people knew that they needed the braceros to do the farm work. And the Mexican Americans in the town, yes, there were some harsh words about the bracero, mainly because they were interfering with the social life in Pecos. The dance halls were full of braceros, whereas before local people would fill the dance halls, and suddenly you had nothing but braceros in the dance halls, and so there was a lot of resentment about that. But people were more rational, I guess, at that point, so they had to get along. We had to get along.
Right.
I don't remember any violence, any sort of that thing. Yeah, there were words, but I don't remember any violence. If there may have been, it might be documented in newspaper articles.
Anything else from here?
Okay. There was a lot of local intermarriage with the local women by the braceros. Not initially, but later on they caught on that if they married a local woman, that they got to stay.
Local being Mexican-American?
Mexican-American native-born women. And some of them caught on, I guess. And once the local law enforcement found out that they were married to a local woman or something, they left them alone. Nobody ever questioned their citizenship or pushed or sent them back or insisted that they go back into the farms. They stayed in the community, in town. I had an aunt who married a bracero. When he found out that she couldn't have any children, he abandoned her. I had two cousins, females, who married braceros, and they had families, and the bracero stayed in. My maternal grandmother, she lived with a bracero for a while until my other aunts got scandalized and insisted that he leave. But grandmother was really enjoying her life too.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of very large farms. If I remember, there were the Maddoxes, the Armstrongs, the Dinglers, the Ivies. I think some of the Ivies even moved into this part of town. And they may have some local histories and pictures about bracero life. We might do that. The other thing that there's a good source and no one has touched on, and that is that the local Pecos Enterprise has a lot of newspaper articles about braceros, and no one has ever touched those.
Right, and you mentioned earlier off tape, off the record, that some of those articles portrayed the braceros in a very negative light.
Yeah, they wrote about the negative parts, but I'm pretty sure there were articles about what they were doing for the town, for the community, because at one point Pecos became celebrated for having the most bales of cotton per acre, and sometimes the first bale of cotton of the season would come in Reeves County because the braceros were there.
Okay. So, and as a student in high school, I'm assuming that you know, you went to high school every single day and you interacted socially. How did the local high school students react or respond to braceros? And then did those braceros have kids that went to the schools?
Yeah. Basically, it was two lives. We lived the life of where I went to the farm and I worked at the farm, and after school and in the weekends and during the summer. But when it came to school, I was in a total different milieu because we needed to acculturate, we needed to do this, and so it was all focused on an American system, American life, and American. I learned to speak English immediately and with an accent, a cowboy accent, and that sort of thing. So it was a total different life. There were a lot of kids that came to school, and sure, there are a lot of kids that lived in the farms, some from braceros, who went to school, and they went to the Anglo part of the school. They weren't bused to the Mexican school. They actually went to the schools with the other Anglos, and they acculturated very rapidly. Mm-hmm. It was not a problem until they were overwhelming the Anglo classrooms. When they were overwhelming the Anglo classroom, then the local school board started to build extra classrooms on the Mexican side, and then eventually we were totally segregated again.
Did you ever, were you ever witness to any problems while, for example, problems at work, any accidents or illnesses that may have come over the braceros? Were any of them ever hurt?
I do not remember any, like I said, there was no crime that I can recall. There were no beatings of braceros or anything like that I know about. There might be some if we look through the newspaper articles that were written, because the newspaper documented everyone who was arrested or given a ticket and that sort of thing. So there might be some in there. But I think what helped the bracero a lot was that he was a very happy, easygoing person. Knew when to back off and that sort of thing, so he was able to live well in those communities out there.
Right, to maneuver.
Yeah, to maneuver. And basically, most of them stayed in the farm. The only time they came into town was for grocery shopping or for recreation, and then that was mostly on the weekends.
Right. You mentioned that Saturdays and Sundays, the streets and theaters were filled with.
Yeah, that's when the Anglo community did not come into town.
Okay,
they didn't go to the local shopping strip and that sort of thing. It was left entirely to the braceros, and because the braceros literally filled the sidewalks.
Yeah.
And so the Anglo community, they did their shopping during the weekday. The bracero took over the town on Saturdays and Sundays.
And was it? Did the Anglo community basically just capitulate the weekend for the braceros, or was there any resistance toward that?
No. The Anglo community knew that they existed because of the farms.
Right.
And so they did, you know. And yeah, let them have it. They had their nightclubs, and they had their things that they did, and their socials at their homes and in their private clubs and that sort of thing, at their country club. And so the bracero did most of his shopping on Saturdays and Sundays.
Was there one, or were there more than one Catholic church in the town?
There was more than one Catholic church in town. St. Catherine's catered to the Anglo in Santa Rosa de Lima, catered to the Mexican community. There were very few braceros who went to the Catholic Church. Most of them did not go to church, because I remember being in the church and there were very few braceros. Most of them stayed in the farm. What was happening is that the evangelical groups were going to the
braceros
and were doing their evangelizing the braceros in groups. And I guess they made some conversions. I know that there was an article in Time magazine where someone documented that the priest was griping about the evangelical work that these guys were doing, because they literally had these men captive in the barracks. And I suppose that the farmers, the owners, allowed that. You know, there was nothing about allowing the Catholic priest to go in and that sort of thing.
So were the owners, for the most part, were they Protestant?
The owners were mostly Protestant.
Mostly,
yeah.
Protestant.
There's a very small Catholic Anglo community in Pegas.
So as far as the celebrations of Easter and Christmas, did you see the Bracero community?
The Bracero community did not participate in the town in those activities. I don't know what they did for themselves, and I'm pretty sure that they didn't have the concept of Christmas like we do about gift giving and decoration, that sort of thing. To them, Christmas was something different.
Did Pecos ever experience any organized protest against the braceros, or did, like you mentioned before, did they view the bracero as an economic necessity?
It was an economic necessity, and you know, rational people knew that, and a lot of business owners knew that they depended on the bracero, and so they tolerated it. I never heard that there was a protest against braceros. You know, there might have been some racial bigots out there who were vocalizing their hatred, but braceros were needed.
Right. And as far as the term bracero, what is your recollection? What sort of was it viewed as, using the word bracero in Pecos by a Mexican American, was it a negative connotation?
Yes, but Mexican Americans in town use the word bracero against someone who from the other side.
Right.
Basically, bracero meaning that it was people who had to heat their homes with brasas from the coal that they burned, and that's where the word bracero comes from. Embers in English.
Right.
They would burn wood outside, would bring the embers in a tub and put them in the middle of a building to heat themselves. This is where the brasas came from, the bracero.
That's interesting. I've almost always heard that it comes from the word brazos, because they use their arms for labor. So that's you bring another side to that story. That's very interesting.
No, braceros, no.
Yeah.
Braceros means people who heated their homes with brazos.
And in general, your memories as a young man growing up in Pecos around braceros, are your memories positive or negative?
Very positive. Yeah. Because when I was in the farms, and after the braceros would get off of work, you know, hey, I enjoyed going in and taking a taco, a burrito, whatever they were making, and they were always kidding with me, and I was 14 and 15, they joked and that sort of thing.
Did you ever notice perhaps one or two men that being a bracero may have changed their lives? Or did they just pretty much all go in, work once they're permanent? expired?
Well, like I told you at the very beginning, most of them didn't know what it was all about. They came and worked, but soon they came to interact with the Mexican-American community, and they found something similar, the language, the food, and that sort of thing. And so they began to realize that it wasn't so bad. Once you got out of the farm, you could stay in town. And many of them tried that by intermarrying or finding a place to stay in Pecos. Because sometimes, I never heard that the farmer wanted the bracero to go back home after a season. If he could keep an experienced bracero, he wanted to keep that experienced bracero because he knew how to do the things that needed to be done in the farm. And that's what the farmer wanted to do many times, is to keep them around. I never heard of anyone getting rid of experienced braceros.
And were many of them, you think, since the farmer wanted to keep them, did many of them stay illegally?
Or did like they? I tell you, if they did, no one ever thought about them being illegals. No one ever thought about them being illegals. They were just part of the community who were doing a job. And there was never any effort to round them up and send them home. The farmers wanted to keep them. They needed them there. They didn't care about legalities. They might, around the processing centers and that kind of thing, along the border here, but Pecos is about 210, 50 miles from here.
And any final thoughts as far as the history of bracero? I mean, what sort of heritage do you think it's going to leave the United States?
Well, there might have been a few wars back, 100 years or so, about taking over territories, but it's quite obvious that the territory is basically coming back to the mestizo in a very peaceful manner, that they're all moving in here. We moved in here, or we married into them, or we have family, we're an extended family. And so it's a very positive thing. It was from the very beginning. It was economics, and economics again today is determining how we live, either we're neighbors or enemies or even our Iraq war. It's not a war of politics, it's an economic war. We know that. The guys in Iraq, well, the natives in Iraq and all the other guys out there, all the Arabs know that the reason why we're up there is just to make sure that we keep the oil.
And it's rather timely, I think, that the current administration is kind of playing with the same concept of the bracero program. They want to have a guest worker
program. Well, they want the cake and they want everything, but they have to, someone has to give something. In other words, the bracero wants to come here, and everybody knows that we need the bracero or we need the worker, the immigrant worker. And so where do you compromise? The Mexican government says, look, besides you guarantee them the rights and privileges of the Constitution, you also should give them economic benefits, you should also give them constitutional benefits. And that's what is, it is all whittling down to that. The United States cannot bring over another 2 million individuals and then by the end of the winter ship them back home.
Right.
That's logistically almost impossible.
Any final comments?
No, I'm glad someone has finally decided to begin to write down the histories. I wish I had more or less been motivated to do some of this, because my dad was telling me histories of my great-grandfather, who was a mule trader from Mexico coming into Fort Davis in training with the soldiers at Fort Davis in the 1860s, of how my grandfather would trade food and supplies with the Indians for horses. The horses belonged to the soldiers in Fort Davis, and my grandfather would take the horses back to Fort Davis and trade them in for guns and money.
Okay, well, it was a pleasure sitting with you and interviewing you. I'm sure that anyone who listens to this, whether at UTEP or at the Smithsonian, will have a lot of information that they can get from this.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.